Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Radzeski, and I'm here with Greg Baer. We are the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
And today we're talking with Sarah Shapiro, Executive Director of the Alliance for Learning Innovation. The Alliance for Learning Innovation supports improved research and development in education by bringing together education nonprofits, philanthropists, the private sector, and more. Sarah, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here, live from DC.
Oh, we love having you here, Sarah. And let's jump right into it. The word innovation is right there in the name of the Alliance for Learning Innovation. And all of us, as parents, educators, and caring adults in the lives of children, want our kids to receive an education that we'd call innovative, that sets them up for success in this rapidly changing world. But I suspect we're not all on the same page when we use that word innovation. So get us started, Sarah. Can you help us understand how the Alliance for Learning Innovation thinks about innovation in education?
And like you said, a lot of people come at this from different perspectives. But in our case, we think about innovation in education in that it can encompass a lot of different things. So it could be new ideas about education, new methods of teaching and learning, new technologies that make the learning experience better for kids, and that ultimately improve educational outcomes, because that's what we're most concerned about. You know, and then I also think it could be an innovative learning structure or a structure of the day, a new way of busing kids to school. It can be a lot of different things and not just technology, though technology is a big piece of it. We want students to have the knowledge and skills and competencies they need to succeed in this rapidly changing world. Different ways of making teaching and learning more engaging and more effective for kids.
And so much of this innovation is powered by research and development. And I'm wondering if you can help us understand the significance of R&D as it relates to education. I know when I hear those letters R&D, I think about people in white lab coats testing out new and strange gadgets. But can you talk about R&D in education? How does it shape the experiences that kids receive at school or wherever it is that they learn on a daily basis?
R&D in education is so critical to the development of the innovative school models that we just talked about, to making sure research gets into the hands of practitioners, and to thinking about ways of addressing big, hairy, thorny challenges in education. So half of school districts nationwide don't have enough special education teachers, for instance, or we have this persistent chronic absenteeism problem across the country. R&D is really critical to helping us solve some of those problems and develop new approaches to education. I think it's particularly important to talk about R&D right now when we know that we're facing sort of a critical education crisis. We just got the NAEP scores back. You know, they call it the nation's report card, where, you know, one third of eighth graders can't identify a text's main idea. So they're below basic in reading. One quarter of fourth graders are below basic in math. And these pretty stark and very upsetting student test scores, I think, really underscore the need for us to better understand at a fundamental level what works for whom and in which context. And that's really what education R&D is about.
Sarah, the wickedly smart people among us have always had to fight for research and development dollars, whether they're in the fields of science or commerce or spaceflight. And at the federal level, allocations for R&D have always been far lower for education than, say, energy or military technology. And yet, over the past few decades, our education researchers have made some pretty amazing progress, haven't they?
Yeah, I think that's such an important point. I just want to stop on it for a minute. If you think about R&D in every sector of our economy, whether it's energy, agriculture, medicine, it's been the foundation for major innovations and breakthroughs in those fields. And we really have not applied that same investment level in education, to your point. Even with that, we are seeing how federal investments in education R&D have made a big difference, like the science of reading. That was the result of 20 years plus of basic research into how kids learn to read and how to teach kids foundational reading skills and curriculum and practice guides that help teachers and districts and states choose the right curriculum. And those federal investments, even though it's a lot less money that we invest in R&D and education, but those federal investments created that knowledge base for how to do literacy better. And we saw the results of that in states like Mississippi, the widely credited Mississippi Miracle, where then Superintendent Carrie Wright invested in the science of reading and training literacy coaches across the state, which skyrocketed their achievement levels in literacy instruction. The federal support for education R&D can provide local and state educators with the data they need to make better decisions about the programs to fund and what to invest in to benefit their students. So again, at the federal level, it's really creating the knowledge base, collecting the data, and then helping state leaders, district leaders, make decisions on them and make sure that evidence-based practices are actually getting out into the field.
And yet, Sarah, you're in DC, you know, and many of our listeners know, we find ourselves at this moment where those federal investments have been cut or they're at risk. And I'm curious, from your perspective, how is the field responding or pivoting? Where are we going to look for high quality research and development in the years to come? And in this moment of uncertainty, what's giving you hope?
You know, I think a little over $1 billion in contracts and grants for core data and research activities that were cut. Half of the staff of the Department of Education was cut. And IES, the Institute of Education Sciences, which is the part of the Department of Education that is tasked with research and development, lost about 90% of its staffing. So these cuts and changes, there's no way of sugarcoating it. They will profoundly change the capacity and impact that IES is able to have. So we should all be concerned about that. And we should be concerned about, at a time when the NAEP scores are showing us the kids are really struggling in core skills like literacy and math, that we would be pivoting away from data, research, and evidence is really concerning. The Ally Coalition, so it's 90 plus members, and we've all come together to say we absolutely must be investing in basic data collection like the NAEP score, like college scorecards, the Common Core of data. We have to continue to invest in the basic research that produced the science of reading in advanced R&D that's going to take us to the next level in terms of what we're able to do in education.
And Sarah, just one point of clarification. You referenced Common Core data. In doing so, you weren't referring to the curriculum that sometimes people refer to as the Common Core, but rather having a common set of nationally available data by which researchers and curriculum designers and others might identify interventions like that Mississippi Miracle. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. And thank you for clarifying that. It is not the Common Core curriculum. It is having core data sets available at the federal level that are used by entrepreneurs, by teachers, by parents and families when they're choosing a school for their kids. That is the kind of data that we believe the federal government should continue collecting and making available to the public. And these are things that you can't replicate in 50 states and territories. You can't have a common core of data in Mississippi and Louisiana and Illinois. This is a role that the federal government is uniquely positioned to play. So we are focusing on the blueprint for what's next. Again, it's not how we would have wanted it to happen. We didn't want IES to be almost cut completely, but we are focusing on working with the current administration to make sure that in any sort of rebuild period that we may see ahead, that we have a blueprint for what we need in education R&D at the federal level. And at the same time, we're also pivoting to focus on how do we support states and districts? So we have partnerships with state chiefs around the country. We're working with governors across the country to, again, articulate what they need from the federal government in education, research, and development, but then also think about what they can be doing at the state level to support state and district-driven education, research, and development. We're partnering with our friends at Digital Promise on a group of convening innovative district leaders on R&D and helping them advise us on how we can be supporting districts in this work. And, you know, what gives me hope is that there is, despite all of the noise around all of this, there is a lot of bipartisan consensus about the importance of data, evidence, and innovation. We're going to focus on that. We're going to focus on where we can work together and try to continue to push the field forward.
Sarah, your passion for this comes through so clearly. And I'm curious, when you're out there making the case for increased investment in education R&D, what are folks responding to? What are the stories, the narratives, the data points that people find most compelling?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the science of reading example is one that has resonated with almost everyone we've talked to. The Soul to Story podcast and the movement around science of reading has been really transformational to the field. And that, again, was based on federal research. So that has been something that folks have resonated with. I would also say, too, that innovation, back to the original question, and this need to bring education along as a field in the way that we have invested in other sectors of our economy has also resonated. We need to invest in education in the same ways we invest in the R&D that we do, agriculture and medicine, if we want to see the breakthroughs and if we want to make sure that our kids have the best opportunity to succeed.
This is Greg Baer here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Sarah Shapiro, Executive Director of the Alliance for Learning Innovation. Sarah, you are a powerhouse of a leader at the Alliance for Learning Innovation, and in part that's because of what you bring to the position and the positions that you've held previously. You've worked in the Chicago Public Schools. You've worked for national organizations like Digital Promise and the League of Innovative Schools. You led educational services for PBS. So in thinking about these settings, what's been the thread or the through line that's linked it all together for you?
This is such a good question, and I appreciate it. I think the through line is the importance of people, building networks, building coalitions, and lifting people up, networks up, schools up, districts up. What I've learned is that you can't do anything alone. You need to build your team. So that's your team at your organization, but also the network of teams that build the work along with you. I certainly saw the power of networks when we built the League of Innovative Schools, and you were there for so much of the beginning of that. The education innovation clusters, all of that work was about networks and communities and coalitions. And obviously you've seen that in your own work in Pittsburgh with Remake Learning. And so I keep coming back to, it sounds cheesy and sort of a cop-out, but people, it's all about people and standing up the work of innovative and incredible and inspiring people. I think that is the through line, is networks and coalitions and people.
So let's talk for a moment just in particular about the League of Innovative Schools, or schools that might be members of something like a League of Innovative Schools. Because as you were saying earlier, schools themselves, particularly at this moment, can be, should be, must be incredible laboratories for innovation. So how do we need to better support schools in these years ahead to be those laboratories for innovation?
Schools and districts are where innovation happens. And I would argue that all good research has to start with designing a research agenda that is based on a need that teachers, schools, districts, and states have. You know, they know what the need is. And, you know, as our friends at Digital Promise have put forward and are leading on, education R&D has to be inclusive. It needs to be designed with schools. It needs to be designed with innovative districts. And I would say then it's the federal government's role and also states' role to support those schools with the basic infrastructure they need. And that's, you know, a lot of what we're talking about when we talk about the cuts to IES, the cuts to the Department of Education, the cuts to the kinds of things that make it possible for schools and districts and states to do their work. And I would argue that's data, that's research to know and do what works, and that investment in the bleeding edge of what's possible in education. So sort of that DARPA for education model. So we have to be there to support schools and districts to do the innovative work that they are set up to do, that they want to do.
Sarah, I'm thinking about this sort of double helix that holds your career together. It's innovation on one strand and people on the other. And I'm just curious, you know, was there a teacher of yours that, looking back, you now recognize as innovative, even if he or she didn't use that word?
Oh, yeah. That's such a great question. I went to a really wonderful school in Baltimore where I grew up. I think very fondly of my kindergarten teachers. They were Hillary and Peter. We called our teachers by their first names. And I remember very specifically a unit on monarch butterflies and how we learned about our connection to the environment in Baltimore, to the natural process of how caterpillars hatch and transform into butterflies and watching them and freeing them at the end of the unit of study. And I just remember loving that and just feeling so connected to monarch butterflies in that experience. I had a teacher who taught a class in high school called Civil Liberties, and it was a new kind of thing. I didn't know other people who were taking a similar kind of class, but it was all about our bond as a society and how civil liberties were so important to understand just our rights as humans in this society. And it was a very foundational course for me. And then I also think about a teacher I had who taught a class called the Brontes, and I learned that I have a love for English literature. So much of who I am was based on the educational experiences I accumulated over the course of my life as a student in Baltimore. I don't know if they were particularly innovative, but they were incredibly inspiring and engaging. And in the end, innovation is about engaging and making sure that you spark a love of learning in every student.
And in many ways, you are paying this forward yourself. You are a founding member of CHIEF, a network of women in senior executive roles. Can you just tell us a little bit about that work and why it's so meaningful to you?
I love CHIEF so much. I've met incredible women and have been able to mentor other women through this process of helping to start CHIEF in the Washington, D.C. area, but also to be part of a core group of women who are sort of peer coaches to each other. For the last 4 years, we've met every 6 weeks to coach each other through our careers, our professional challenges, family and personal challenges. It's been the most incredible professional experience I've had in terms of learning how to be a female executive, learning how to be a good boss and mentor and support to other women in the field. And I've just learned an extraordinary amount from the other women who are part of CHIEF. I'm very grateful to the CHIEF network and to the women I've gotten to know through that process.
Sarah, you bring so much passion to your leadership. That's clear. And I imagine it brings you some joy, especially that work on behalf of learners and educators. And we're curious, what brings you joy?
I do really love what I do. I think it would be hard to work as hard as I do, as the two of you do, as so many of your listeners do, if we didn't care about what we were doing every day. I loved learning. I loved education. I loved my education growing up. And I very much am committed to making sure that others have that experience as well. What brings me joy in my personal life right now is my family. I have a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and an amazing husband who's a middle school counselor. So I get the other perspective of the educational challenges that are in the field. And I just learned to play Mahjong, which I'm pretty into right now.
Oh,
so.
Nice. Yes, nice.
I wouldn't say I have a lot of free time with a 2- and a 5-year-old, but I'm trying my best to have a hobby one of these days.
And before we go, just one more question, Sarah. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Making sure that you are helping a kid love to learn and working really hard to figure out what works for kids and for whom and in which context, in the R&D context. But in the end, we really just want every kid to love to learn. And so as a parent, an educator, as a community member who cares about education, that should be our goal.
Thank you so much to Sarah Shapiro, Executive Director of the Alliance for Learning Innovation. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.